I sure do like those Christmas cookies, sugar. I sure do like those Christmas cookies, babe. The ones that look like Santa Claus, Christmas trees and bells and stars. I sure do like those Christmas cookies, babe.
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Tis the season for cookies, and everybody has a favorite. What's yours? Maybe it's the flavor of the cookie. Maybe it's the story behind the cookie. Think about that while I introduce our guest, Dispatch food editor Lisa Abraham. She spent 7 years writing about food for the Akron Beacon Journal before joining the Dispatch staff in April 2014 as food editor. This is her second holiday cookie section, her second appearance on the show for the holiday cookie section. Welcome back, Lisa.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Another December, another baking season.
And, you know, it never gets old for me. I hope it never gets old for you, since it's what you do.
I love to bake. Baking is how I started out cooking. So
this cookie section predates you at the Dispatch, but it became a tradition very quickly.
It sure did. It dates back to 2007. So we are in, I think this is our seventh or eighth edition. If I could count,
eight.
I could tell you.
Yeah.
And 50 recipes in each. So we've got quite a collection together already. And I know people save them from year to year,
yeah,
because we routinely get calls from people who missed it or accidentally threw it away, begging for one. And we usually try and comply if we can. This year, I will tell you, though, they're in short supply. They didn't print many extras. So they are, if you've got it, keep your hands on it. As I tell people, you could sell it on eBay, because there's some desperate person out there who's going to want it eventually.
Yeah, I'm so appreciative to Lisa. I'm lucky because mine was flushed away with the recyclables over Thanksgiving. And thank you so much for bringing in another copy.
Not
for
a problem.
Me, because I do save them and treasure them.
You're one of the lucky ones. You've got an extra copy.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful light blue snowflake.
It is a beautiful cover, isn't it?
Yeah,
and I have to give a shout out to our art director, Todd Beha, who designed that cover. And not only did he design, come up with the concept, he made the cookies.
And he decorated them.
And he decorated them with his six-year-old daughter, Evie. And I know they had a good time making them, and he was very serious. He came to me and said, I'm thinking I want to put snowflakes on the cover. Could we do cookies that look like snowflakes? And I said, you know what? You're the artist. You do the cookies that look like. And I handed him the recipe for cutouts, and I said, have fun. And he took up the challenge, and they're so beautiful.
They are.
Yeah, they really are.
Wow. Because you don't do cutouts,
you know,
personally.
I do cutouts occasionally, much to my husband's dismay. Cutouts are his favorite cookie, and I buy them often. You know, they're time consuming, and they just take a lot of time, and I don't have the time to commit to doing, you know, that kind of artwork. And I'm not that artistic, believe it or not. I mean, I can make a beautiful cookie, but I can't do that kind of detail work.
Well, not like
I don't
this. Not with the icy piped icing and
stuff. I don't
stuff.
Have the artistic skills, so I left it up to the artist, and he certainly didn't disappoint.
Yeah, you know, I like to doodle, and I might have the artistic skills, but it's more than just artistic skills when it comes to piping icing.
It really is. You really have to have a steady hand, which unfortunately I don't have after typing for the last 30 years. I have crinkly arthritic fingers. But I think that's another reason why I just don't do it. That's what I said. If I were doing those cookies, I would have coated them in white icing and slapped some sprinkles on them. And that's what they would have looked like. So I'm glad that Todd took the challenge and did it. And just,
they're
I
lovely.
Can't praise it enough. It's so beautiful.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It's our annual holiday cookie show today. My guest, Lisa Abraham, food editor for the Columbus Dispatch. She earned her oats once again this year with the holiday cookie section in the Columbus Dispatch. If you have a question or comment about any of the recipes in the Dispatch holiday cookie section, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And more than anything, we love to hear your stories about your holiday cookie traditions. I cherish them every year. I look forward to hearing what people have to say, sharing your favorite recipes, telling us why it's your favorite recipe, and maybe the stories behind it. 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You asked readers to share
some
of their
theme
stories
this year.
Behind the recipes.
Tell us your story.
Yeah. So tell us about some of those stories.
You know, there are
only
also, we selected four to sort of focus on.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we're limited by space. If you go through the section, you'll see that throughout we have little snippets of other people's stories along with their recipes. But I mean, you know, you can't. It's just so beautiful, some of these stories. I mean, the German raspberry-filled cookie, the Spitzbuben. It was given to a woman when she grew up in upstate New York by her next-door neighbor who had escaped the Nazis. I mean, just these beautiful stories that people tell. You know, this is who I got this recipe from. This is where it goes back to. You know, this woman took it from, you know, literally racing out her back door, trying to hide silverware in her pockets. And then she made it to Africa and then years later made it to the United States where her brother was waiting for her. I mean, what beautiful tales people have to tell about the cookies and just the stories behind them. And I always say, you know, all the best stories are told around the kitchen table. Mm-hmm. And really, that's where some of the best stories are created as well, and some of our best memories. And that's just like a typical example. And then, of course, the other fellow from Columbus, William Maple, who, you know, his mom, when she died, his brother took all of her cookbooks, the handwritten notes, the stacks of cookie recipes that she had saved over the years. And he made photocopies of every one of them and he handed them out to everyone in the family and they continue to hand them out. And when I got an envelope, it was like a manila envelope filled. And I thought, who's sending me a book, you know? And sure enough, that's what he did. He said, these are my mom's recipes. We made a commitment to hand them out to anyone we could. And I'm sending them to you in hopes that you'll pick one to go in this section. And, you know, some of them were just like lists of ingredients with no instructions because she'd been doing them for so long.
Yeah.
She didn't, you know, she didn't need any instructions. So we actually had a hard time picking one because we had to find one that actually we could make workable for everyone who didn't have all of her knowledge. But just, you know, he was so touched that we would just pass it on and just keep the tradition going. And that's really what holiday cookies and holiday traditions in general are all about.
I use the deluxe sugar cookie cutout recipe in this old Betty Crocker paperback that I probably got from a garage sale somewhere down the line. But the pages of that cookie, and then I also use their Russian tea cake recipe mm-hmm. in there, and there's another couple of recipes I use in there, but the pages are now like they're fragile.
Absolutely.
And my husband keeps telling me, make a copy of this
because
you're going to lose it.
Or take it apart and laminate the pages so you have at least the individual pages
cool.
you can
yeah.
cut. And then
so
that way
the
they're grease proof.
Page.
Yeah. And they're sort of grease proof that way. You can punch a hole in the corner and
yeah.
just put them on a ring. Then you've always got them together as if it was still a book, but
well,
then
aren't
it's a little
you
more.
Handy.
Call me Martha Stewart.
Okay, hints from Eloise. Give us the call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Kathy in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Kathy.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I love reading the dispatch and also particularly the food section. I cut the recipes out. I save them. I put them in notebooks. I probably have 12, 15 notebooks, different categories, and I use them, and then I kind of compare, you know, one recipe to another, take odds and ends from one, create my own recipe, put notes on the pages. My question is, when I cut them out, sometimes there's recipes back to back, and so you cut one and it ruins the other one. And boy, I sure would love it if somehow when they print them, they could like maybe print an article or an ad or something on the back of the recipe. So when you cut it out, it wouldn't ruin another recipe because I don't have access to a Xerox machine. It would get kind of expensive for the numbers that I'm cutting out and saving.
Are your recipes online?
Our recipes are online, so you can always access them there. Kathy, let me tell you, I feel your pain. I hear it routinely from many readers. I wish we could. Unfortunately, our space is so tight. For us to try and lay out the paper in such a manner, it would be virtually impossible to get anything in there. What I tell people is, you're lucky now the sheets are smaller. Save the whole sheet so you've got front and back, and you can kind of fold it up into a little four. And just
that's a good point.
That's the only thing you can do if you don't have access to a copier handily. Just save the whole sheet so you've got front and back.
Or go online and get the recipe
Absolutely.
Online.
Absolutely, and you can print them out online.
Yeah.
A lot of people like the format that they're printed in the newspaper.
I get that, yeah.
And I get that as well. But yeah, I mean, that's in this day of newspaper size, I guess, for lack of a better explanation.
Well,
it's unavoidable.
Too, human resources. I mean, it would take a lot more time to finesse it that way.
It really would.
Yeah.
It really would.
Kathy, thanks for the call. Glad you like getting your recipes from the Dispatch. So do I. If you have a question or comment for my guest, Dispatch food editor Lisa Abraham, give us a call. 614-292-8513. We're talking about holiday cookies. So we'd love to get your ideas for holiday cookies. We'd love to hear your stories about holiday cookies. You received 165 recipes.
We
now,
did.
Does that count the multiples that you receive from people like Mr. Maple?
Yeah, that's every single recipe that we got. And so we've got a big challenge to whittle that down to 50.
How do you do it? What's the process?
Well, this year it was a little easier because we looked for the best stories.
Okay.
So that made it a little simpler this year. And so those kind of went to the top of the heap. We look for things that are new and different. We look at the last 3 years sections. And if something has been in the last 2 or 3 years sections, chances are it won't get in. Sometimes they sneak in because they're under different names or, this year's caramel nut bars were last year's toffee bars or something like that. Yeah. So sometimes they will get a sneak in. But in general, we have a pretty good sense of what's been in the last couple of years.
And then you have classics, too.
Obviously. And we try not to put in too many classics because honestly, who needs another recipe for chocolate chip cookies? I mean, right. We all have one right on the back of the bag of chips.
I don't think of those as Christmas cookies anyways, I'm sorry to say.
Well, some people do. It's the most popular cookie and there's going to be a lot of them baked between now and December 25th.
That's with all due respect.
I will never diss a good chocolate chip cookie.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, everyone has that. We want new and different or things you maybe haven't tried before. So that's what we aim for.
An email from Angel. I have a question about jam thumbprint cookies. How do I keep them from spreading too much?
Start out with less dough. I think that people make them and they tend to make them sort of the size of like almost like a small meatball.
Yeah.
And I think you can go even a little smaller. Measure your dough. If you have like a rounded teaspoon, use just maybe like a teaspoon, teaspoon and a half, because they do puff out when you make them. And then when you go and put your thumb on them, you bake them for a short time, then you press them. Then you bake them a little longer, they spread out even further. So just start with less dough and that'll solve that problem for you.
And as far as the jam goes on top, sometimes people have a problem with that. And you're right. You bake mm-hmm. them, you spread them, press your thumb into it when they're slightly baked. And then sometimes you can even wait a little bit longer to put the jam in.
You can, or you can even just fill them after they come out of the oven.
Yeah, true.
You know, because the cookie's going to be warm enough. And if your jam, take it and whip it up a little bit with a spoon so that it's a little softer to spread. And then you can just kind of daub it in there and you don't even have to worry about putting the jam back in the oven.
Okay, Angel, thanks a lot for that email. Martha in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Martha.
Oh, hi. I love your comments about the stories behind cookies because it is wonderful to, if you eat a cookie that somebody makes or brings in and then you get their recipe, it is the story that makes them so meaningful and they just come down through the ages. My aunt in upstate New York, she was married to my dad's brother. Her dad was from the Czech Republic. They grew up speaking Czech. And whenever we would visit in the summer, we went every summer, she would always make these great cookies for us. She called them kolachki
mm-hmm.
or Czech butter horns. Mm-hmm. And they just meant love. You'd walk in the house and she'd have taken the time to make these cookies. They would be filled with poppy seed or prunes or nuts. And, after that, since I ate those, I look for that now. In fact, I think that particular cookie kind of crosses all cultures. It's similar to arugula. I'll make that sometime. Mm-hmm,
absolutely.
And, wherever you can go in that Eastern European area, you can find these delicious cookies. And you cannot get them as good unless you make them yourself. If you buy them in a deli, they're just not as good.
Well, I think cookies are always better when they're homemade.
Yeah, mm-hmm, that's the whole mm-hmm. idea. Well, thank you.
So now I still make them because the effort is love.
Right, right.
That's right.
Well, Martha, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Appreciate that.
And the funny thing is we actually have a recipe in this section, and it's listed as Christmas shortbread because that's how the woman always called it, Christmas shortbread, but it is essentially a cinnamon nut butter horn.
Uh-huh.
In fact, when I was reading the recipe and then I went to make them, I said, oh, these are butter horns. But she called them shortbread, so... It's just, everybody has a reason and everybody names their cookie what they want
to
call it.
That's part of the tradition.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, it's our annual holiday cookie show. My guest, Lisa Abraham, food editor of the Columbus Dispatch, did a yeoman's job this year on the holiday cookie section. It came out on Friday, November 20th. You can see it online. You can also listen to us and hear us talk about it for the rest of the hour. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I forgot, Lisa, that one of the side effects of the show is that I start to get really, really hungry and I forgot to bring any cookies to the show.
Uh-oh.
Someday I'll remember. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Thank you.
Christmas cookies are a special treat. The more she bakes, the more I eat. And sometimes I can't get myself to stop. Sometimes she'll wait till I'm asleep, and she'll take the ones that I didn't eat and put those little sprinkly things on top.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. It is, of course, our annual holiday cookie show. Christmas cookies, Hanukkah cookies, you name it. If it's a holiday cookie, we're talking about it today. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest is Lisa Abraham, food editor for the Columbus Dispatch, and sort of the framework of our conversation is their annual holiday cookie section that comes out this year. It came out on Friday, November 20th. We have an email from Barbara who asks if the Dispatch has considered coming out with a book that people can buy with reprints of all the previous holiday cookie supplements.
And I can tell you that, yes, that idea has been talked about. So stay tuned. That's all I can say is stay tuned. I think it's a great idea. Yeah. To compile all of them into a book. I think that it would fly off the shelves, and I think people would love it. And it would be a heck of a lot easier than trying to save all these paper sections. So it,
true that. So. True that. But I still love the sections. I don't know. There's something about them. I love a nice newspaper, though.
So
that's just kind of me. Do you try every recipe? I know you get a lot of help
with
baking.
I don't bake every recipe, but yeah, I sample every single one before it goes in. I do, because I figure I'm easy to please, and if I don't like it, it's not getting in. And this year we had two rejects. They just didn't turn out. You know, we get enough recipes. We corral 50, and then we get five, which I always say are in the on-deck circle, so for baseball fans out there. And then as clinkers come, when they always do, usually one or two. Last year I think we had four or five. Last year we had some bad luck. Then we just pull another recipe and give it a try.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, before they're photographed, I sample every cookie.
Oh, man. What a job. Rough life. Jackie in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, Ann. I'm a devoted listener.
Thank you.
So I know, I know that you are very knowledgeable about cooking as well as other things, and it sounds like you know about just about everything that your guests talk about. So I want to know how you get time with your schedule and how what a marvelous job you do, how you can cook so much and garden and do a lot of the other things. But how can you cook so much?
I'm old.
I am too, but I can't cook so much.
Well, you know, after you do it, and Lisa, you know, tell me if you, after you do it for a long, long time, like I can still remember the first time I made cookies on my own when I was in college, and it was because I didn't have anything. I was broke and I couldn't buy anybody gifts that year, and I was kind of bummed out about that. But then I thought, oh, that's right, I could make cookies and bring those home, and at least that would be something. Like, you never want to come anywhere empty-handed, and that's sort of my feeling about cookies. It's like one of the greatest gifts of all time, right? And so I think that after doing that for 100 years now, you start to think about it. And I don't know about you, Lisa, but when you're in the grocery store and you see sales on things that you know you're going to be using, like butter, for sure. I mean, when butter goes on sale, by
stock
George,
up the freezer.
Stock it up, and I start thinking about it. So it's sort of this thing in the back of my mind that I'm always kind of thinking towards and working on. And this is one of my big dough-making weekends. So I do a dough-making weekend, and then I kind of – then I can – the dough's all made, and then I can kind of roll them out, and on, you know, nights where I'm not too busy, I can just start doing
– That's a great way to tackle it.
And I don't try to do – like, I do the cutouts. I do them all. I get them done, but I don't have to ice them right away. They go in the freezer, and then as I have time –
Sure. You can take them out and decorate
them. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's a great way to do it. You know, I know people who bake their Christmas cookies in October.
Yeah.
And they stock the freezer, and then come December, you know, it's easy peasy kind of thing. You just thaw them. I like to bake them kind of at the last minute. The week up to Christmas is generally when I'll bake. And of course, as we get older, I think we tend to bake less and less because, you know, you don't eat as much. You don't need as much. But yeah, I just, it's what I do in the evening. It's always been my sort of my evening relaxer. You know, dinner's done, the kitchen's cleaned up, and then I mess it up all over again.
Yeah.
A Let's mess it up all over again.
I think over Thanksgiving, I'm not kidding, I cleaned the kitchen 15 times in a 48-hour period.
Oh, no doubt.
Because I have a small kitchen and I have to clean it all up.
Keep
before
cleaning
I
as you
go.
Go
to the next step, right?
I know.
Jackie, thank you so much for listening for all these years, and thanks for your question. We appreciate it. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with Dispatch food editor Lisa Abraham about holiday cooking, holiday cookies, I should say. Very specifically, we're talking about cookies today.
And baking.
And baking. Right. And if you have questions or comments, want a little advice, Lisa Abraham is certainly well qualified to give it to you. If you want to share your story about holiday cookies, we'd love to hear it. That was the theme of this year's Dispatch Holiday Cookie Supplement, was special memories about holiday cookies. So give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Tori in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Tori.
Hi. Excuse me. Hi, Ann. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I lost my wife several years ago around Christmas, and listening to this has brought back such wonderful memories that I had kind of stopped celebrating. Jenny loved to make the Russian tea cakes or the wedding cookies or the jam print. And of all the things we did, the Nutcracker, all of it, this was always our favorite. So I just want to tell you thank you for the show and just, again, bringing back such wonderful memories for me. Thank you.
Oh, thank you,
that's
Tori.
Wonderful. Merry Christmas.
Yep. See the cookie thing, I'm telling you.
It does.
John in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, John.
Hi. Hey, I was wondering if you or the guests would know what happened to the little German ladies down in German Village. They would start baking in August or October, and they had these fantastic cookies, almost the entire entourage of German cookies, north and south, Catholic and Protestant, Bavarian, whatever. and you'd walk in this little teeny shop, and it was so cute, and it must have been like 14 feet across by 6 feet in the back. And you could pick out cookies, and they'd sell them to you in these boxes, and they'd weigh them.
Yep.
And it was just so neat. And then someone said, oh, they're not going to be there anymore.
Yeah, they closed up about 2-3 years ago. It was in fact, I think it was right before I got to Columbus, so I want to say 2013.
But, John, I know exactly. I went there a couple years, and I loved it.
Oh. Yeah, I think the owner was getting on in years, and her daughters were helping her, but I think they had other things going on, if I recall correctly, the story at the time, and she just decided not to do it again.
Yeah.
So, what a loss. That was such an awesome treat, and the fact that they're ethnically, they all look like they were Germans, and were going to cook the real thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were,
and
I
loved the little shop, and I loved how they weighed the boxes of cookies, so you could just put whatever, you didn't have to get
by the pound.
Yeah, just buy by the pound and just get it over with. It wasn't cheap, but it wasn't gouging either, I thought. I thought it was really fairly priced.
Well, if those daughters are out there, I hope they resurrect this.
Well, there you go. Maybe they'll hear you.
Well, there may be somebody is out there who could do it, and there's certainly a niche for that because people love that home-baked feel.
They absolutely do, especially the old German cookies. I mean, some of the things that are, you know, more challenging to make, like the Springerli and the Lebkuchen and things like that take some time and effort.
Thanks, John, for that call. I appreciate it. The Springerli. That is one cookie. I have tried to make it, but every time I do, it just comes out like you could just beat someone to death with one of these cookies. They're so hard. What is the deal with that?
You know,
they just look easy. Rae Stein, sports editor at the Dispatch, I might add, makes the best Springerlis I've ever had.
It's funny that you're saying that because most people don't like Springerli because of the anise flavoring.
Oh, no.
And when you were going to say Springerli, I thought you were going to say, you know, they'd knock you out, because I've had Springerli that literally were like worse than some cough medicines I've had.
Oh my gosh.
Because they're so strong. So that's what I thought. But I think it's just a question of making sure you have a good recipe. You know, if your cookies are coming out really hard, you may need to up the salt a little bit because that'll help keep things softer. It just depends. And honestly, I could look at a formula and maybe tell you where it's out of whack.
It's a little chemistry maybe.
Absolutely. Yeah. Baking is all chemistry. But, you know, I think if you're not getting stuck in your molds, you've already got a fighting chance that you can fix that recipe.
Phyllis in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Phyllis.
Hi. I wait all year for this.
Good. Yay.
I have a question about different brands of flour.
Okay.
And I did not realize and I read something online that it makes a difference which kind of flour you use.
Sure.
So I did an experiment with chocolate chip, and I used, I think it was gold medal, and then I used King Arthur. And I can't believe the difference.
Like what was the difference?
Well, first of all, when I went to weigh the King Arthur flour, it was lighter. And the cookies were better.
You know, flours are all different depending on how much protein they have in them, protein level, which is why like cake flour and pastry flour have a lot less protein than bread flour. And that is what will determine the lightness, the flakiness of the pastry to a large degree. That's why we use, you know, certain heartier flours. We want high gluten bread when we're making breads and that sort of thing, pretzels or, you know, heartier type baking. And then you want to use a flour that's got less protein in it when you're making cookies and pastries.
How do you know which is which?
Well, they're labeled. I mean, so when you go to buy, I mean, cake flour, you've all seen boxes of cake flour.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's a lighter flour. Pastry flour is a little harder to come by. It's more of a professional product. And it has a weight that's somewhere between cake flour and all-purpose flour.
And what would it say? Pastry flour?
It would say pastry flour.
Okay.
On it.
All right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, pastry flour. And it's harder to find. But you can even, you know, cut your flour. You can do some regular all-purpose flour, and you can cut it with some cake flour if you want to lighten it up a little bit.
Uh-huh.
You know, a lot of people are very particular about whether they want bleached flour or unbleached flour. A lot of experts will tell you that you want bleached flour when you're baking things like cakes and cookies because it is a lighter, it's going to give you a lighter texture. But a lot of purists will say, you know, they only work with unbleached all-purpose flour and that sort of thing. Bleaching is just chemically aging the flour. It would happen to your flour anyway as it got older, but it's just a chemical aging, so it takes it to that point sooner.
My flour never gets that old, I don't think. But Phyllis, thanks a lot for that call.
Yeah.
And thanks a lot for listening to the show year after year. We appreciate it. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. An email from Debbie. She says, I'm trying to duplicate a cookie, which is a hazelnut macaroon ring topped with whipped cream and then dipped in chocolate. Does your guess have any
macaroon
with topped with whipped cream?
Okay.
And then dipped in chocolate. I don't even know how the whipped cream would even hold up that. She says, does your guest have any suggestions to ensure the whipped cream doesn't fall off the nut ring when it's turned upside down and dipped in chocolate? I can't even imagine.
I'm trying to think how that's a cookie. It's a hazelnut nut ring.
Nay, hazelnut macaroon ring.
So hazelnut macaroon is going to be sort of chewy like an almond macaroon. I'm assuming you're making it with like a nut flour. So it's going to be like an almond macaroon. And then you're topping it with whipped cream?
Yeah, that's what it says.
I wonder if she means like a whipped cream frosting or if she means real whipped cream.
Yeah.
And then dipped in chocolate.
And she wants to see how...
If you want to try and dip whipped cream in chocolate, you're going to have to make it either really stiff, stiffen it up with some sugar, stabilize it with some sugar, or I would suggest just drizzling the chocolate on top of the whipped cream.
Yeah, that's an idea, drizzling the chocolate on top.
Sure.
But I'm still wondering how the whipped cream holds
too.
Up. I'm curious
too.
About that.
That or maybe more like more of a pastry.
Or maybe egg
meringue.
Meringue.
Yeah,
Maybe it's meringue. Maybe
and
that's
what I'm wondering
problem,
if it's meringue
Debbie.
And she doesn't realize that it's meringue.
Yeah, it's meringue. Yeah, that's a good thought.
Which is whipped egg whites, not whipped cream. So
right.
Maybe. And if that's the case, then you just have to let it harden long enough.
Yeah.
To have it so that you can dip it.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Let's get a call from Melissa. Hi, Melissa. You're on the air. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to let you know that I went to the Dispatch website and printed off two of the cookie cookbooks, and they just turn out beautiful.
Great.
Beautiful.
And, you know, we're really excited that for the first time we have 3 years up there, and they're all in color PDF format, so you can print them out, and they do turn out really nice.
And do they just come out in like 8.5 by 11 type of thing? Oh, great. Okay.
They do. And full color, so you can print them out full color.
That's great.
Might use your color ink cartridge up, but at the same time, especially if you want to save them, it's nice to have them in that format.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I could send it to my daughter-in-law and my daughter, so it was just great.
Or you can just send them the link, and then they can print it out, too.
Yeah, that's true.
She's like, oh, I wasted all my paper ink, and I could have just sent those girls the link.
Oh, Melissa, thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Take care. Enjoy.
Good idea.
I know that was great this year when I was told by our team that they have 3 years online. I was so excited because we always get requests. And the fact that they put them in a printable format is so much nicer.
Right. Justin in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, Ann. I was just calling in to answer a question that a previous caller had asked about the King Arthur flour.
Mm-hmm.
The big difference between like King Arthur flour and other brands is it has a higher protein content like the like your guest was talking about. Mm-hmm. So something like a generic all-purpose flour or gold medal have about 8 or 9% protein content. King Arthur flour is closer to 13 or 14% for the all-purpose flour. So that's probably the difference that she was experiencing.
Okay.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's what we were talking about.
Thanks a lot, Justin.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a question or comment about holiday cooking, holiday cookie cooking, holiday cookie baking, I should say, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I want to turn to Nicole right now because, Nicole, you're calling to talk about spritz cookies?
Yes. Hi, Ann.
And I think that the reason why I want to take it is because when I mentioned Springerly earlier, I was thinking of spritz cookies.
Oh,
which makes
okay.
a lot more sense
it
now.
Does.
I had a brain, you know what, right then, and I was thinking of spritz. So go ahead, Nicole, with your question.
Yes, hi. Yeah, I've been making spritz cookies with my family for many years. We got the recipe actually from my dad's mom. And I've never seen anybody else make them before, so I wasn't sure if anybody else had made these cookies before.
Spritz cookies?
These are the kinds you use at cookie
press. They are one of
press.
The oldest, most popular kinds of Christmas cookies. Yeah, in fact, in the olden days, they just churned out tons of them. They would color the dough different colors or use different sprinkles.
And that's what I was talking
and
about.
It was essentially the same dough.
Like racks. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
It was essentially the same dough, and then you could portion it off, and you can color some red and some green, and then you put the sprinkles on, and you can do the discs from the cookie press. The old mirror cookie press that a lot of people probably have those from their moms or grandmas. You know, they have the different discs and then you can just press them out into the shapes. So you can do wreaths, you can do trees. excuse me.
But all right. So now getting back to my problem. Why are they so hard? Am I overcooking them?
You could be overbaking them. Again, I would have to look at your recipe.
Yeah,
it's hard to know in a vacuum, but if they're real hard, I'm guessing, is there any salt in your dough?
I don't know. That's a good thing. I'm going to check. I'm going to check that first of all.
Should be at least, maybe a half a teaspoon of
salt. I want to make them again. And that's what Ray Stein makes, the sports editor.
I was going to say, I've never tried the sports editor Springerly, and if he's making them and I've never seen them, that's something.
But he makes spritz, and they're really good. And he makes different, like lemon flavored ones.
You can flavor them, you can color them. It's really one dough, and then you just, separate it out, and you can color them different colors or flavor them different flavors. You can do them almond, vanilla, lemon. I mean, so many choices.
So, Nicole, is this something your family does together?
Yeah, actually, we get together every Christmas and make them, and it's kind of actually fun now that we have kids. We let them actually do all the sprinkles, and it's really messy really quickly.
It does. My mother-in-law used to make a lot of spritz cookies, not too many anymore, but she used to make in the day quite a few. And they are fun. And usually the hardest problem people have making spritz cookies is getting the dough to cut off when you want it to cut off. It's like you're not taking a trail of dough across the tray.
Yeah.
But it's like anything, there's a learning curve when you learn how to use the press. But yeah, that's a fun cookie and very old, very traditional. And you're not the only one making them.
Okay, Nicole, thanks for that call. We are going to take a quick break. Then we'll come back to our holiday cookie show. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Now those sprinkly things just make things worse because it makes them taste better than they did at first. And they're absolutely impossible to resist. Some disappear to who knows where, but I make sure that I get my share. And those kids just stand there waiting for the ones I miss. I sure do like those Christmas cookies, sugar.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. With me in the studio, Lisa Abraham, Columbus Dispatch food editor. We're talking about holiday cookies today. And on November 20th, the Dispatch 2015 Holiday Cookie Supplement came out. If you have a question about that, give us a call, 614-292-8513. We have lots of lines open, so and not very much time left. So give us a call if you have a great story to share with us about holiday cookies. That's what we always love to hear more than anything. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Barbara in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. I was just wanting to mention that I was in third grade. My mother hated baking, and I decided one year I was going to make Christmas cookies. And so she handed me her old hardback, spiral-bound Betty Crocker cookbook.
The old red and white one.
Yeah, and I went through, and I wrote up a list of all the cookies I wanted to make, which was extensive.
As a third grader, I'm sure.
And I had to, you know, she had me write out the shopping list, and she said, you know, we'll go shopping. She bought me all the stuff, and I started making cookies in October.
Wow.
And I bet I had 20, 30 some different kinds of cookies.
Oh, my word. As a third grader.
Yeah.
Bless you.
And
now we'd be afraid to let a third grader near the oven, right?
probably. But one of my cookies were spritz, and since that was the topic,
it
was a delicious hazelnut spritz.
Ooh,
where you actually ground the hazelnuts. You ground them.
Oh, my God.
And it was in that cookbook. And they are so good, and every spritz I made out of that book was good. But that's one of my big things was, and when my mom passed and we found the cookie cookbook, I said, I want this. Because I was the only one that did it.
Aww.
I had hundreds of dozens of cookies in the freezer.
Aww.
And everyone would go, you know, like when everybody would come over, people would go and get a tray of them out of the freezer or whatever, and we eat on them all winter almost.
Yeah.
There you go.
But,
did you do that every year, Barbara, though? Did you keep doing that?
I did.
Oh,
I did. And I still have the cookbook.
Aww.
And I still have one of my, and it still had one of my original lists in it.
Aww.
Of the cookies that I made. So
isn't
when my mom passed, I told my sisters, I'm like, I want the cookie cookbook.
Absolutely.
It sounds like you've earned it. It sounds like
you've
earned it for many
How
years.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
That's
you
a
have
great
a good
memory.
Holiday season.
You too.
You too. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Tim in Dublin, you're on the air. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Ian. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
I just want to tell you about the importance of measuring.
True.
I was making a snickerdoodle kind of Rice Krispie cookie, and the recipe called for 3 cups of Rice Krispies.
Uh-huh.
So I'm thinking a cup is 8 ounces, so that would be 24 ounces of Rice Krispies. That was a box and a half. So I poured it in the bowl and thought, wow, that can't be right. So, you know, I want to urge to your listeners, be careful with measuring, right?
Yeah.
When it says cups, use cups. When it says a weight, use the weight.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Now you tell me, Ian.
Sorry about that, Tim.
Well, lesson learned.
Can't believe everything you hear on All Sides. Right?
Yeah. I've always thought it would be a
great show, ladies. Keep
Thanks.
Up the good
Thank
work.
You.
Thank you, Tim.
Bye.
Yeah, true, though. I mean, sometimes
I
you have to learn the hard way, like Tim. But...
And I often thought they should give a class in how to read a recipe.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yes.
Because there really are little tricks.
I think some of the best cookbooks, though, are the ones that don't assume, and they kind of... I still think that kitchen book cookbook, Faith Duran...
Mm-hmm.
Their new cookbook.
Sure.
It's an incredible book. With
it is.
Just
it's
I mean, it's
book.
A lot of it I already know, but I still love to go back, and you just like
so
to fall
useful.
Back and be sure of yourself.
Yeah, and it's just useful, and that's what's great about it. Plus, the recipes are
my gosh,
so good.
Yeah. I've been going hog wild
on
that one.
Mm-hmm.
Email from John in Columbus. He writes, about a decade ago, I found a recipe in the Dispatch for a Moldavian spice cookie in the annual holiday cookie section. Couldn't have been a decade ago, but be that as it may, about 8 years ago.
Sure.
It was the only clipping I have ever kept in my life, and of course, I lost it. Do you recall the recipe or have another name I can use when searching for it online?
I don't recall that particular recipe. You probably won't be able to find a recipe that old online, but if you send me an email at labraham@dispatch.com, I will find it in our library system and email it back to you. So I can help you out that way. But okay. Unfortunately, I'm not familiar with that one.
So L. Abraham at dispatch.com, John. And hopefully we can help you out that way. And I'll go back and look and see if I have that myself. If I do, I'll post it on our Facebook page.
There you go.
Email from Jay. He says, I'm not sure if you were able to say a company name. Of course we can. But I really love Cheryl's cookies, the sugar cookies with frosting. I don't suppose there is a recipe that's close to Cheryl's recipe for the sugar cookies. Hasn't anyone ever asked you for that?
No one has ever asked me for Cheryl's recipes. You know, companies that are in business now generally are very proprietary about their formulas.
But it's a soft cookie, obviously.
A soft sugar. Actually, we have a soft sugar cookie recipe running in next Wednesday's food section. So you might want to check that one out. And it might just fit the bill for you. And it is the woman who gave it to us uses a lemon frosting on it. But you could certainly use any flavor frosting on top.
Anything with lemon in it.
There you go.
Email from Angela writes, Lisa, have you seen a change in recipes and ingredients in the past few years that coincide with the health fads? Gluten-free, healthier recipes, ingredient substitutes, that kind of thing.
You know, when you're making cookies, let's face it, you've already thrown health out the window when you started baking.
When you're buying.
Primary ingredients are butter and flour and sugar. not much you can do to make that healthy. The healthy comes in moderation. So, you know, don't eat 12 cookies.
Are there any
gluten-free
recipes?
There are lots of gluten-free recipes out there.
Good.
In fact, we have a couple in the cookie section. We have a gluten-free, sinfully rich gluten-free bars, which are really easy. And the woman who sent in the recipe, how brilliant, she just took a traditional 7-layer cookie and substituted for the graham crackers on the bottom, gluten-free cookie crumbs. There's actually gluten-free graham crackers out there, so if you want to keep it the same, you could use that. And then you just layer, you know, your nuts, your coconut, your morsels, your butterscotch morsels, and your sweetened condensed milk. And there you have it. So you've got traditional 7-layer cookies or magic bars, whatever
gluten-free
you grew up calling
them. Gluten-free and all the fat and
gluten-free and you
calories.
Got all the fat, all the sugar that you want. You know, in terms of health crazes for cookies, no, I'm not seeing a whole lot. There are gluten-free formulas that are coming out for traditional recipes.
Sure.
And generally, there are good substitutes on the market now for like a baking mix, a flour, a gluten-free flour that substitutes well for all-purpose flour. And frankly, if you can substitute that, then the rest of the recipe generally is good to go because you're looking at sugar and eggs and flavoring
butter.
And butter,
butter
that's and nuts.
A little bit more butter.
So, you know, nothing that you have to worry about if you're gluten-free. So if you have a good basic substitute for your all-purpose flour, you can probably transform most of these.
Erin in Dublin, you're on the air. Hi, Erin.
Hi. Hey, I just wanted to give encouragement to any young moms out there. I did not used to be able to cook a cookie until I watched Ina.
Oh.
And she did the recipe tip about the butter on the counter before you cook with it and having the eggs at room temperature.
Uh-huh.
Do you feel like that's pretty important or do you feel like that's maybe...
It's vital to have your butter at room temperature when you're going to bake with it. Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Unless you're making a pie crust, in which case you want it icy cold.
Right.
And eggs at room temperature, I kind of go either way on that one.
Really?
A lot of people say that you get more volume out of them if they're at room temperature. I don't notice a huge difference, but it certainly isn't going to hurt if you have them at room temperature. And a lot of people feel that if everything is at the same temperature, then when it goes in the oven, it's going to do better. That if you don't have certain ingredients that are cold and certain ingredients, you want everything at the same temperature so that when it goes in the oven, it's consistent and all the components are consistent. And there is some wisdom in that. So, you know, certainly go ahead and keep your eggs at room temperature. But butter absolutely is vital.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I used to take it from the fridge cold.
Yeah.
Well, I keep mine in the freezer.
Yeah.
And I have to remember to take it out.
Sure.
And butter keeps, you know, too. That's the
butter
other thing.
Butter keeps on the countertop. Yeah. You can leave it out for 24 hours and it's fine.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Erin.
Yeah, thanks.
What's your favorite kind of holiday cookie?
You know, I was just talking to my sister about this because we're going to do it. And actually, I kind of love the peppermint bark.
Ooh, yeah.
Oh, there you go.
I kind of love doing
that.
More
of a candy girl. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I really am. And then, the peanut butter blossoms. But I'm still searching for a good peanut butter dough. I cannot find a good one that's as good as the one that you buy.
Is there one in the...
I know.
I don't know. I don't think we have a peanut butter dough this year.
Huh.
I know. Okay, it's hard to believe, but...
watch what kind of peanut butter you
use.
We
do.
Though.
The Micey Morsels are a peanut butter dough. Yeah. So that would be, you could certainly use that as a peanut butter cookie. And those were very tasty.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
All right, Erin, take care.
Thank you.
Bye. Hi, Ed in Baltimore. Hi, Ed in Baltimore,
Hello.
Ohio. Yep.
Yes. My wife is in the basement as we speak, making her balls of cookies to bake tomorrow.
Great.
She's had the cookie dough made for about a week.
Yeah.
And but she likes to change up the recipe depending upon what she has. For instance, I like her white chocolate macadamia nut cookies. And one year she's like, we have some currants. What do you think if we put some currants in there with that?
Sure.
And they tasted really good. And she did an oatmeal raisin cookie one year and put craisins in it, which
cranberry?
Was really mm-hmm. delicious.
Mm-hmm.
But when you talk about changing up the recipes and whether the eggs are warm or the type of flour, she's also found that the type of margarine she uses or butter, depending upon the cookie,
mm-hmm.
will change. There's one brand of margarine that she will not buy because every time she's tried it, the cookies come out exact, very flat and not firming up very well when they're baked.
Yeah. Margarine has so much water in it that it's really unstable for baking. You're better off using Crisco than margarine.
Okay. Hey, Ed, thanks a lot. And that sounds really good. Take care. Martha in Delaware. Welcome to the show, Martha.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Interesting comment made earlier about the importance of reading the recipe and mm-hmm. also chemistry involved in baking. About 32 years ago, I was making a dessert at Thanksgiving for the first time that involved baking the pastry part first or the cake and then putting a custard on top with pumpkin and all mm-hmm. that on top. And I had just baked the bottom part first, pulled it out of the oven, and put my mixture on top and put it back in the oven. My mother was visiting, and she turned to me and she said, isn't it amazing what eggs can do? And I said, eggs? Looked back at the recipe. It had called for 4 eggs that I had not put in. So I pulled the thing out of the oven, scraped it all off, mixed it back in with the eggs, and baked it successfully.
Okay, but so it was the topping that you didn't.
So you salvaged it. So it was like the custard, the pumpkin custard that was going in the bake
eggs?
Press.
Oh, my, that's funny.
We've all had our disasters.
Oh, we have. And some survive and some don't.
I remember the time my mom made a pie and it looked gorgeous. And she forgot the salt and the crust.
Oh.
And just forget about it. You just don't go there. That's,
last week I made the Grandma Johnson's chocolate sugar cookies that were in the dispatch.
Good. They were a nice cookie.
They were good. My family enjoyed them.
Kind of plain, but a nice chocolate, like a good coffee cookie, I think.
Huh. Yes. Excellent coffee cookie. So. All right. Thanks. Enjoy the show.
Yeah. Thank you, Martha.
Thanks for reading.
Email from Sediana. She says, one of my favorite memories growing up was making sugar cookies with my mom, my sisters, and occasionally my brothers would help. We had to make about 1,200 cookies every year. Uh-huh. My mom would make just a regular sugar cookie with thin dough.
Uh-huh.
We had the awful plastic cookie cutters that were in Santa, snowman, and snowflake shapes, and we iced them with different colors of icing. Then after all the cookies were made, we would go Christmas caroling and hand out all the cookies to the people we went caroling to.
How sweet.
How awesome is that?
That's a sweet, sweet tradition.
Yeah.
How nice. I hope she keeps it up with her kids.
Harry in Urbana, you're the last on the list here. So how you doing?
Hi, Ian. I'm from Amherst, Ohio.
Okay.
And I'm a truck driver, so I come down here every day. And I love your program. I listen to you guys all the time.
Thank you.
I grew up with sugar cookies were my favorite. And the recipe we have is from my great-great-great-grandmother. It's been handed down. And when my mom got the recipes, when they started doing the cutouts.
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay.
And then my wife and I, we do the cutouts and ice them and sprinkles. Sometimes we get fancy and do the other stuff, you know, make them real fancy.
With the piping and stuff,
It takes a lot of time, but if we're going to take some somewhere special, we take the time to do it. And you can also change the recipe and put a little of molasses in place of some of the sugar, and you get a molasses cookie that she makes the gingerbread guys out of because I don't like gingerbread.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to ask a quick question about that song, that cookie song.
Yeah.
I love that. I'd love to find the words to that.
Just Google it. It'll be the first. Just Google the Christmas cookie song, and it'll pop right up.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, I should say who sang it. I can't remember, but you can't miss it. You can't miss it. It'll pop right up.
Well, my family, we're all singers and musicians, and we can have a lot of fun with that song.
Oh, yeah, it's a hilarious song. Thank you very much, Harry.
You bet. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
And have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year if I don't talk to you before.
Thanks. You too.
Yes. Thank
you. Okay, here comes the song now. Lisa Abraham, food editor for the Columbus Dispatch. Thanks, as always, for joining us.
You're welcome. It's always a lot of fun.
Thanks to everybody for listening. Here's the song.
Those kids just stand there waiting for the ones I miss.
I sure do like those Christmas cookies, sugar. Sure do like those Christmas cookies, babe. She gets mad if they're all gone before she...